Welcome to the Experience Focused Leaders Podcast. My name is Alex Shevelenko. I'm CEO and founder of Relate2, and we are on a mission, both with the podcast and with Relate2, to bring the most important ideas to life. And how do we do that? We do that through amazing, immersive, engaging experiences that move your organization forward, move your customers forward, and move us as a society forward. So if you love ideas, if you love bringing these ideas to life, stick around. Also, at the end of the podcast, we'll reveal how you could potentially be a guest speaker on the podcast as well. Let's get started. Welcome to Experience Focused Leaders. I am delighted to connect you today to Payal Raina, a founder of Fin.Tech Marketing Community and the marketer herself. Payal, welcome to the pod.
Thank you so much, Alex. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Well, I love what you're building with the community. It is an initiative that we were fortunate to see how you started out bootstrapping it on your own. And now, you know, we're happy to support it in kind and participate in one of your webinars and are delighted now to see that it's thriving and having a momentum of our other friends, much larger than Relate2, supporting you like KPMG and TCS, Tata Consultancy Services. So tell us about this community and why communities are becoming such a key pillar in how we get business done in 2026 and beyond.
Great. No, thank you so much, Alex. It's a great question, indeed. So I started thinking about the community back in COVID, where we all were looking at the world through Zoom lenses. And I was thinking about how on earth are we going to be closing million-dollar deals over, you know, Zoom calls and where the human touch is so important. So that's how the journey started, about me looking for a community for myself and then not finding one. And I, you know, as Mahatma Gandhi says, be the change you want to see in the world. So I took that seriously, not to mention we were watching Boris Johnson's briefing every day. And we thought none of us are going to come out alive from the COVID. So rest is history.
So you had nothing to lose except for the worst few days of your lives. And so you went ahead, let's build a world. All right.
Exactly. So I didn't want to do, you know, leave planet Earth with a regret. So I thought, let's give it a go, as you rightly said. And I spotted a gap in the industry where I felt there were lots of communities out there, but they were very much operating in silos. Like there are lots of women's communities, financial services community, tech community, fintech, CMOs, etc. So my kind of vision was, how can we bring financial services, tech and fintech together? Because I could see the convergence happening in the industry, and that very much aligns with my personal background. Like, you know, I used to be working for big banks to big organizations like Microsoft, GE's, and driving marketing for payment tech and fintechs. So that's how the journey started.
So let me pause here. Just so what you're saying is there's this gap where like startup bros and chicks or whatever like show up and talk to other startup people. And that's great, like if you want to talk about some inner things, but it doesn't actually build go-to-market relationship, doesn't help you to get to know your customer. And then if you're on the other side, if you're like a corporate, it doesn't help you get innovative ideas ingested into your organization. And so like these communities historically kind of hanged out, but didn't talk to the most important inputs into themselves, right? And they were a little insular. Did I get that right?
No, spot on. I couldn't have said it myself beautifully. So you've articulated really nicely. So yeah, so we kind of build the community as a go-to global market platform where we could be a key part in the ecosystem, bringing, you know, financial services, whether it's traditional finance, hedge funds, asset management funds, and then your disruptor fintechs and the techs, which are providing infrastructure all together as you rightly said, looking at the customer journey from end to end, and having those honest conversations. So yeah, that was the idea, but we are very niche in terms of, financial services and techs, because we saw the shift where banks were looking at these fintechs from more than a competitors to collaborators. So there was that shift we were noticing, and it was good timing. We were all sitting at home, and fast forward it now to 6 years' time, the community is a peer led. We have folks on the board, and the chapter leads in Hong Kong, Singapore, New York. Everybody came in to support to build this global go-to-market community platform, and I'm really excited because now we have got over 25,000 subscribers and members globally who are coming in to help us connect, learn, and grow.
That's amazing. And just to give you a shout out, one of our favorite podcast guests, Scott Brinker, was just featured in your London meetup, which was a spectacular event. So I think you're bringing again these different disciplines, right, that historically maybe sit in their silos. And then I think the financial market focus makes sense. It's not a niche. It's a trillion-dollar mega space, obviously. And also it does require specialization. And I think what we are seeing, because we focus on regulated verticals, like we are practically, while we could provide one core platform, we're building very specific knowledge around the vertical specific needs, whether it's in finance or insurance. It sounds like you're providing that opportunity to have some horizontal vendors and some horizontal providers that want to specialize, and then in-depth unique knowledge of like, here's what we need, and so that dialogue is happening between the insiders and the service providers.
100%, because we want to hear the story from both sides of the camps, right? And kind of going back to your initial question about why communities are so important than ever before, is because they're building that human connection. They're building that safe space, which sometimes it could be hard to find. And you're right, yes, financial service is a trillion-dollar industry. But when the business and marketing leaders, found out we have got this community which is bringing not just their FS peers together, but also fintechs, because they can learn from how they're agile, how they're nimble, how they're disruptors. So that kind of drove trust and collaboration. And as you know, trust is a new key currency. And all the work Relato is doing, as you said, from a digital standpoint, and particularly how you're servicing the market, is so regulated. Alex, I'm sure you feel the same way, that it's a very different beast. You can't just, package it as a B2B or B2C. It needs its own focus as a community. And a good example is, like, on Thursday, this Thursday, we are running a dinner after work, and we are bringing all the CMOs of asset management and wealth management together. So yeah, so I think having those dialogues, both from FS and tech, is really important to build trust and collaboration.
Well, I think one of the words that is important to us is relationships, right? It's even in the one of the like relating to someone and relationship, it's kind of they're connected, relaying information and relating, and the best way to relay something meaningful is through a relationship. And I think you're bleeding edge on in person relationships, and then moving that into digital communications as well. And from our point of view, the way you describe this, the trust is a combination of, is this a trusted source? Is this a relevant piece of information, right? And then is so trusted means like it's not some AI slop, right? That is gonna get me fired. Is this relevant, meaning like if the content is easier to create, how, like what matters to me is the content that I can get to that's relevant to me, particularly to me in my context. And then the third piece is, you know, is it moving beyond information and into something that's experiential that I could go ingest into my head, into a new way of doing things, act on. And sometimes that spontaneity happens in person. You really feel that. And I think but to scale it to your team and to move it beyond, you also need the digital tween to that in-person interaction. And so that's our obsession, is how do you build trust, relevance, and experience that drives behavioral change versus like, let's shove, as marketers we know, let's shove more information, let's shout more, let's give more monologues about how great we are, or let's do more pseudo manufactured case studies about customers that are gonna maybe not be very trustworthy because they come from a vendor. So I think we're going at the same goal, but I think we're obviously building a slightly more scalable product-driven approach to what you're building with communities. But the idea is that you're the buyer seller relationship, for lack of a better word, should be more partner relationship. It's a community relationship, and we're here to help. And if we're not a good fit, let people discover that, and you know, come back when we could be a good fit to their problems. Like, those are the best vendors think like that. The best buyers think of like long-term relationship with vendors and don't want to burn bridges because innovation is happening so fast. You know, you don't want to have a bad reputation as somebody who burns fintechs or startups and, you know, does pseudo projects. So I think that's sort of that you're building a little bit of a more of an accountability into these community efforts. Like, what have you found in this thread of trusted, you know, experiences? What resonates the most with people who participate or sponsor the community?
So, first of all, Alex, I think you've hit on a few points here, which is absolutely super critical. So, from a community standpoint, what resonates the most is that peer validation, if I have to summarize it in one word. And it could be peer validation in terms of, given the community is quite senior, it's a very senior, like 80% are decision makers, like C-suite heads, department heads. Now, as you know, the more senior you go, you get siloed, right? People expect you to know, and I'm sure you as a, CEO, people expect you to know all the answers. But there's an opportunity where you want to validate whether it's onboarding a new vendor, as you said, right? Whether it's making sure, am I on the right track by implementing this right strategy for my business? So we kind of then support our, peers and our members through that journey. So whether they are looking to make a decision to onboard, whether they are looking to build their own brand, whether they are looking for a soundboard, whether they are looking for mentoring, coaching, they need some extra training. So the community becomes like a home, and that home resonates with them. So they have been people. And again, Alex, like folks like us, right? You have been following and being part of the community since we started back in like 2022, et cetera, like back in the days. And they, they just keep coming back, and that's how the community has grown through word of mouth. So yeah, anyways, a long answer to your short question there. It's about, having that peer validation that builds the trust, and hence for us, it's not onboarding any vendors, the community, but most of the businesses or solution providers are recommended by the members. So it's a very membership-driven community where another classic example is of, a couple of years ago, as you know, the job market was going down. Lots of the roles were getting redundant. People were making and taking fractional roles. So the members came to us and they said, how is the community supporting as part of fractional roles? So then we launched our talent board. So yeah, so I think it's very much driven by what members see, and we are built by practitioners for practitioners, and they are the one who are helping us to pivot when we need to. For example, they wanted an AI training. As you know, UK, there's a regulation around Europe, training. So yeah, so we're kind of delivering to what they want, so they feel listened, heard, and also they can see everything in action. So yeah, and I think that's where, getting back to what you said, whether what how you are supporting the businesses, it's about that trust and collaboration, because they trust us that the vendors or the solution providers in the community are going to bring, they are there for the right purpose, exactly how you articulated, in terms of how you work with other businesses and your clients.
So you're enabling a dialogue at scale fundamentally versus traditional marketing is a little bit like I get up on top of a pedestal and just yell and scream in all directions and hope some of that lands. You're enabling mass parallel conversations. That's beautiful. So you brought up AI. And you brought up turnover in the industry. So I think if I had to take these two topics, so one of your stakeholder audiences is CMOs and senior marketers, and I think that is they probably the highest turnover role inside corporate Britain, corporate America, corporate Singapore is the CMO. And then the other one is AI, innovation, disruption, bandwagon that we're all sitting on top of a volcano and trying to figure out, how to get some useful energy from that, and not get burned. So what, let's start with the pressure on the CMOs that you're seeing that are kind of members of the community. What's at stake for them of not getting it right, of missing their impact in that year and then getting fired and looking for the new role?
Yeah, no, look, let me answer the first part, and these are all good questions here, right? So the I think the pressure on the CMOs, particularly in 2026, has reached to a boiling point now, right? The honeymoon phase of AI experimentation is over, right? All I've heard this for time and time again. The board is now demanding to see, a hard ROI on AI investment the marketings are making, whether it's depending on the size and scale of the organizations. And it's so yeah, so it goes back to the basics about doing more with less. So I feel there is, if you look at like a recent data from Gartner, you would notice that there's a maturity gap crisis. And what I mean by that is there's a disconnect between ambition and reality. And for example, the goal is, as for the Gartner report that got launched recently, I don't know the exact name, but it said 70% of CMOs say that they would need to be becoming an AI leaders now. And that is very critical for their goal in 2026. But the reality is only 30% have reported a mature data where they can actually demonstrate whether it's terms of building right AI infrastructure in their teams, whether having the right talent, the skill set to actually scale AI. So I think there is, so th I would say like a CMO are raiding their traditional budget to fund their, to fund AI, to build the infrastructure to show results. So that's why they are facing an intense scrutiny from the CFOs, because it's still kind of, they need to prove the ROI. But I'm going to pause now. Does that kind of, yeah, give you a bit of an insight there?
So there's the proof of the ROI, but let's forget the AI for a second. Like pre-AI, what do you feel is the biggest kind of the lever for CMOs to keep their job? Like I think that's is because it's sort of, and a lot of members in the community are B2B. That's why like the buying relationship is an important. So historically the B2B CMO is seen as weaker power-wise than a maybe B2C CMO, right? They are a little bit at the mercy of pleasing the sales organization. And so I'm curious as to what are the patterns that you're seeing and what are the most successful CMOs in the community are doing to have a continuous impact, because unfortunately, you just can't have that much impact if you have only a year in the role, right? Like by the time you warm up and start running some campaigns, you're out. And so that's got to be, something that I think about when we're starting to partner with a marketing organization. It's like, how do we make them successful? And I'm really proud of that. But I think that, I don't have all the answers. I'm curious to see what, if you've seen anything in your community. And obviously AI is one of those pillars, right? Like, but it's not the only one, is my guess.
Sure, no, and yes, as strange as it sounds, there was a time before AI, and it's part and parcel of the what we do now. So look, from the first and foremost challenge, which we have been hearing across 100 countries where our members are, right, in North America, Asia, US, Europe, is mostly about getting a seat on the board. So if you still look at the percentage of number of CMOs who are going to be, and that means having the voice on the table. So that's number one. So and here's a fun fact for you. Some of the members mentioned that one individual who actually had his job title was Chief Marketing Officer. He dropped ING from his job title and was Chief Market Officer. And guess what? In a few months' time, people perceived him differently, and he actually got a seat in the board because people thought it was, and it was the same thing he was doing. So I think the irony is marketers sadly are not doing a good job kind of positioning and marketing themselves. One of the key requirements and the pressure from the businesses is to speak the CFO language. And that is so critical, and hence, as you rightly said, the average tenure of a CMO in most of the organization, again, there's so many drivers and variables, but it's like max like 1 to 2 years.
So basically, suggestion number one, spoken like a true marketer, is to rebrand yourself from chief marketing out to chief marketer, or maybe chief go-to-market officer, like that you heard it here. I haven't heard that one before, but I think that, because I think sadly, the chief revenue officer is 90% of the time is not the CMO person. It's the sales leader that takes that function, which I kind of hoped, my vision was that marketers need to behave like sellers, and the best marketers will behave like sellers and deliver revenue, and the best sellers will behave a lot more like marketers. And so I think I hope that the more of the marketers would take up that ample and drive the revenue banner. But it, for whatever reason, I haven't seen, the title doesn't represent marketers as much. Have you seen something different? Are you seeing positive trends in this direction, or it's still exception, not the rule?
I would still say yes, there has been quite a few positive trends. One of the things we observed was, I don't know, Alex, if you heard, there was a job title called CMT, so Chief Marketing Technologist, because as you know, particularly in the far last few years post-pandemic, there everybody has to be like now an expert on tech stack, or to some extent, right? All are leveraging so much. So technology was a bread and butter. So we did see that shift where it was more like a CMT role, where you need to understand technology, you need to be understanding how the tech stack works, etc.
So you're
And
like
in
the CIO of the marketing organization, basically, is kind of,
100%.
That's great.
Yeah, no, exactly. So I think going back to your question, then to recap, to say, look, speak the CEO or CFO language. That's really important in order to be, having that voice on the table. If you keep looking at vanity metrics, that's not going to take you anywhere. These many clicks, these many followers, the question comes, so what? And kind of working closely, super closely in line with the sales team, right? It's all about driving the pipeline, the growth, the business, and how the brand story or the company story is going to help bridge that gap. So I think I feel marketers, CMOs or CMTs, or however you want to call them, end of the day, they need to be a storyteller, whether to your investors, whether to your board, whether to your clients, whether to your staff members. And if they're doing a poor job, sad to say, the role might not sustain for a long time.
And I think on that note, there is obviously the brand and the storytelling expert of marketers, and then there's like demand gen stories where like we have that many SDRs, that many inbounds, SQL, MQLs, like all the buzzwords that kind of go from a pipeline, traditional pipeline generation. And it feels that in this AI noise level world, the demand gen is obviously still the critical measurement, right? Like it's like how much pipeline do we contribute to that ends up being revenue, but it's getting harder and harder and harder to break through. Is that so does that kind of lead us back to storytelling, community, other initiatives that are sort of trying to have differentiated approaches to a noisy marketplace where traditional acquisition demand gen acquisition channels are just getting overloaded and not as effective. What's your take on that? Like, and you benefit, it sounds like the community is benefiting from some of that. Motion partner-led strategies is another area that we're seeing. What have you been observing, especially maybe in mid-sized businesses where it's not a mega relationship, which those maybe have not changed as much, but the ones that relied, on maybe high volume demand gen tactics in the past.
Yeah, no, look, there are two dimensions of this question here. So one is particularly like let's from a financial services standpoint where their brand awareness is quite high, right? So for them, it's less about demand gen, but more about retention and increasing the share of wallet. Of course, there is demand gen element. So I think given the as a community, we are bringing two pull
Right,
on
since
for this
you have
segment.
those, right, you have for that larger segment, it's different. It's
Yes.
retention because there's so much competition. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you've got your startup and scale-ups, as you
Yeah,
rightly
yeah,
said, where they
yeah.
have got different challenges because nobody knows. And regardless, both parties or both camps need to tell their stories, but the relevance, the significance, and how they narrate is very different on the two sides. So for me, what's really important, particularly when you're looking to cut through the noise, as you said, how can they cut through the noise is firstly, brand is back. That was one of the
Yeah.
key things we were discussing at our European conference in London a couple of weeks ago. Not that it had ever disappeared anywhere, but
Yeah.
people are realizing that people want to work with people. Again, it's nothing new, but
Yeah.
the trust
Yeah.
that Alex, you talked about, right?
Yeah.
And that trust will help you to get that repeat business. That
Yeah.
trust will help you to get, your next new client or your increase your share of wallet. And hence, I think communities, that's where we started the whole
Yeah.
conversation. It's going the whole circle back now, is are far more important ever than before because that's where the decisions are happening. That's where people are like already making decisions. And just one quickly contrast and comparison, you made a point of traditional marketing, Alex. So traditional marketing was more of, for me, it was one-sided. And the idea was to educate our customers or economic buyers. Now, this is a modern marketing, whether it's AI-driven, demand-gen-driven, however you want to kind of, package it, where more than 70% of your customers have already researched about you. So
Right.
if I've got a need and, if they're looking for a digital, a platform like yourself, I bet they've already gone in and they know more about you than you do consider. So I think those traditional one-way bombarding with the emails, et cetera, educating them, they know already. And then whatever's left over, they're sitting in these communities and they are now validating that, oh, we are actually looking for, I don't know, an automation platform. Is that the right one? So I guess what I'm saying is the buyers in nowadays are far more intelligent. They are far more digital savvy. They've got all these Claudes of the world, Gemini,
Yeah, doing all
GPT.
the work for them. Yeah.
I guess the biggest challenge, and that's the note I want to think you to leave on, is for marketers needs to be thinking about servicing machine customers. It's
Yes.
less about
You have two
human.
audiences. You have the Perplexities and the Claudes, and then you have the humans digesting whatever those customers process. Is that a way to think about it?
Yes, it is. But just another string to add to it, what I was thinking about machine customers, what I meant was that now, if Pyle needs to go out and shop for an insurance product, I might just have an AI agent who's shopping on my behalf and
Okay,
coming
I
in and
see.
presenting to me top three choices about
Yes.
what should I even go. So that means, as an insurance provider now, they need to be servicing that machine customer, which is the AI concierge or bot,
Yeah.
who's actually
Yeah.
shopping on behalf of the actual buyer. So
Yeah.
they don't think about trust. They are not driven by emotions. They're very driven by precision of algorithms. And so you're right. There is that, and I think that's where we are, at a cusp of where we're focusing on the human bias,
Yeah.
and they're absolutely important, but these machine bias are very, very gradually and quickly coming into this workforce. And yeah, if you're not serving them well, then we probably have no chance being on the top three on the list.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say that. This is exactly the tension that we experience as well in our universe. So like think of a large document, right? So that's, let's say, a PDF for crying out loud, as you know. We have a special proclivity of working on these. So let's say you have this 80-page report. So right, like default right now, it's gated somewhere. Nobody sees it. Even the person that fills out the form and puts their name and puts their work, number, people, project, whatever, they fill it out. They kind of are intrigued enough to go through all these hurdles. They sign up to the report, and then, oh yeah, wait, we'll come to you in your mailbox in 5 minutes. And most likely they'll never get to it, despite the initial interest. If they get to it, they open it on their phone, downloads, and like they're shoved with 80 pages wall of text that's not easy to navigate. And so nobody, like not humans, not machines, really read that most likely as a default. Like that's maybe legacy content, but it does build a perception that somebody has written the report, they know about it, so there's some expertise, maybe hangover of expertise that comes from that. And then let's imagine the modern scenario or the future scenario where that report is now optimized both for the human to experience it, to kind of dig into it. They could navigate to the relevant things. It feels modern. They could talk to it. They could, find, either through nonlinear navigation or through chat, the exact nugget they're looking for, and it comes to them in real time. They don't need to wait for it. So that's a win. But in the parallel, there is a machine buyer that can actually now read it. And those historically don't know how to index PDFs really well, just like the SEO teams, they're not as good at indexing PDFs. This one, because it has structure, metadata, can actually, every page has its own URL slash index, how it fits in. It could actually read it, get to the interesting things, and ingest that information into the buying process, thus getting an unfair advantage to the provider of that report. And so at the end, you're building trust and information density, but you're making it human friendly. And as we know from Google, who gonna probably a lot of the AI is still copying many of the Google algorithms, they did something really interesting. At some point, they started adding algorithmic value, not just to the information, but to how friendly it is to the consumer of that information. As in, is this asset mobile readable? Is it like, does it feel like people will spend time on it? Do they spend time on it? And so eventually, I think the buying agents will look at the information as one of the category, the quality of the information, but the quality of the experience for their human audience to go and validate it. I think that's going to be more and more important, because I'm not going to trust the buyer, the algorithm that's going to get me to some dumpy website That looks like my grandma built it in a basement in 1990s, even though it may have some information on there, right? Or a PDF that, I would be ashamed of, sharing as a modern buying experience. So I don't, what's your reaction to this dual challenge, right? Like the information, thoroughness, trust, expertise, and then the human component, working hand in hand, to deliver a modern buying experience.
Yeah, no, look, it was a nice kind of, analogy. I loved it how you kind of put this together. And look, looking ahead and seeing what the future entails, it has to be a combination. You can't do one or either, particularly where we are now in this era. So it has to be a combination, as you rightly said, that you can't completely trust blindly the machines. So there has to be that intervention. So it's kind of, for me, using machines to do the legwork for you, and then bringing the human touch where you need to take this key decision point. So, and look, 5 years down the line, Alex, if you're having another podcast, we're doing the same recording, I'm sure world would be a completely different place. But I still feel it's still relevant. You need that. It's an experience. I love that terminology. And it works very well, as you said in the beginning, like how can we cut through the noise? So it's not just, having the right data, having the right, community, but everything needs to be, packaged with the experience. And I think that's really important differentiator, whether you're working in a, with a business, whether you're working with any organization or your peers, that experience that makes you feel that, being that, having that trust, having that collaboration, giving that confidence, that visibility you need. And like you said, right, that trust with your documentation platform is to present those statistics to the senior management level, to demonstrating that how they are future-proofing themselves from whatever AI might bring or those machine customers might bring. So I think it's a good way to kind of balance those things up. But as I said, it's a few years down the line, let's see how it goes, because the Generation Z is coming up and they are the one who are, 10 years down the line, I believe they're going to be taking over about 40 to 50% of the workforce. So they are a very different,
They're different animals.
very different animals, or so who knows? Like, again, talking about my 14-year-old, or they are, for them, it's less about in-person networking, but for them, everything is digital. So they don't want to, talk maybe that much as we probably, we wanted to do. So, but I'm excited. It's an exciting phase where we are in, and I'm looking forward to see what the future brings for us.
Well, let's say somebody's listening to this and they're excited to add community-led growth as a pillar to their strategy, and whatever it may be, in fintech, fintech marketing community, or other communities. What would be your advice to people that are new to the community world, or maybe vendors, for example? Like, where would you advise them to get started, and take advantage of the shift and the entrepreneurial juices of yourself and your community members on building such a magnificent resource? Like, where would be the first step?
So the first step for me would be build your belongingness before selling. I think that's very, very powerful, because end of the day, it's not about having those transactional relationship. Like, don't get me wrong, right? Everybody wants to join some community, be at some place because they want to get out of something at the back of it. But unless you're prepared to give in, pay it forward, then that's probably not the right, place for you, because people will pick up, people will sense. And I think I've got huge regards and respect to all our board members of the community, our members, everybody globally. They're coming in. Alex, you probably would be surprised. Like, when we had a European conference, the folks took days off from work. They were wearing volunteer T-shirt, and these people are running multi-million billion-dollar companies, heading marketing or businesses, and they're putting up the banners, etc. So it's about the sense of belongingness before selling. I think that's for me is very important. Number two, create your peer-to-peer value. What and how can I help you? Like, you know, when we were having this conversation about podcasts, and I think the first thing we both were saying, you know, how can you know, your podcast can help the community and let others know who are not aware we exist, and let them have a safe home. And likewise, you know, all the amazing work you're doing with your platform, you know, from a PDFs like the old school to the new digital version. So bring the value, you know, create that value through discussions, through recommendations, through sharing, through mentorships, through shared collaboration, knowledge sharing. That's super key. And then finally, I would say is focus on engagement and not just the audience size. You could be part of a 1 million big community, but if it's not engaged, if people don't know each other, if they're not talking. So I think the key metrics would be on participation, would be attendance. Yeah, and I was talking to you, but it feels like a reunion, right? When people
Yeah, that's a
at
great
conference.
feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, yeah, it's a combination of those. Anybody who's starting new, and of course, you know, our community, fintechmarketingcommunity.com, it's free for people to sign up. So whether you are in financial services, technology, or fintech, you know, they're marketing, business decision maker, anyone who is looking to kind of help connect, learn, and grow, we would welcome them to donate their time or their funds or their talent, however they want to be part of the community.
That's beautiful. Well, it takes a generous spirit of a generous attitude towards giving to start something that you've done, in addition to holding a very demanding, marketing leadership job yourself, where, as I was delighted to hear, but not surprised at all, you recently got a promotion as well, that you're lifting this, and it's sort of an expression of a spirit of giving and building together. And I think that's a beautiful thing, as we start back in the beginning of the conversation, that you saw an opportunity to make the world, your professional world, a more meaningful, a more human-friendly place where you could meet professional goals and human goals at the same time. And I would just encourage our community members to think about that. That's very much in line. And those of you that are listening to this that relate to customers, this is our DNA. You've chosen us because we don't just want to help you create a document that, transacts. We want to, that may be the end outcome of it, but the first principle is you're building a relationship with your audience. You're having a human connection through a digital medium. Maybe you're in the room, maybe you're not in the room. But we're all about trying to create a meaningful human spark at scale of a community across many countries and regions, or at scale of a single document. So I salute you for your work, Payal. I'm supporter of the community, and proud to have you here. Last thing, how can people find you personally as well as the community so that they could support you?
Sure, of course, you know, I am there on LinkedIn, so please, you know, check me out on LinkedIn and connect with me. So would be great to kind of know most of you and learn more about you and your, you know, challenges or opportunities, how we can support. And it's a very simple, people can log into our website, which is very peer-led. So it's www.fintechmarketingcommunity.com. So hope to see some of you on the community forum at events, next one. Our next event is in New York on 3rd of June, as part of New York Tech Week. So we are bringing all the community of North American peers together. So I hope to see some of your, you know, Alex, yourself and your members and your clients, hopefully, in June in New York.
Right on. The brand is back. I'm gonna brand myself. I'm gonna put this on right now to be memorable, based on your event. And the community is back. We started as humans in building ourselves as communities, and I'm glad that you're bringing that back to the corporate and financial institution world. Payal, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Alex.
Welcome.
Welcome back. Alex Shevelenko here. Thank you so much for listening to Experience Focused Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at podcast.relayto.com, R-E-L-Y-T-O.com. Obviously, we would love for you to send this to people that you know who would be great speakers, or just share the nuggets that you took away from this episode with your community on social. And you could learn more about what we're up to on relayto.com. You could certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, where it's just very easy to spell my name. You have to have a master's in Ukrainian. It's Shevelenko, S-H-E-V-L-E-N-K-O. Would love to connect so that we can move together the way the world communicates about its most important ideas. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you next time.